It's 6 minutes past 11, a live 90.5 Spotlight with Jim and Darren.
Darren, you know, on Spotlight, we try to bring people to tell their story, to be able to help all of us understand the world in which we live. One of the increasing issues and challenges, and I'm sure it's been around for a long time, but it's gathering more complexity, more energy, is around cybersecurity. And it's an absolute delight to have Professor Alana Marichot, who is a Professor of Cybersecurity, Behaviour School of Social Science and Associate Dean, International School of Computers, Data and Math Sciences at the University of Western Sydney. Your time would run out just reading your biography and autobiographies and all the things that you've done. Truly, the depth of knowledge that you have in this world is just amazing. And I'm going to try and interview you by bringing that out in what you're doing. So thanks for joining us this morning.
Thank you for having me.
Well, you do so many things. I mean, we talk about cybersecurity, our phones and all of these types of things. Is it a big problem?
Cybersecurity for most governments in the world would be considered a top 10 problem for them. So, you know, COVID at the moment, number one, but cybersecurity would be top 10 in almost every country in the world. And that's from the average person, you know, sitting at home to all the way up to the CEO, to governments, industry, everyone at the moment.
And interestingly, because things that you're working on at the moment, that's why I asked that question in a very general way, you're doing research in payment diversion fraud and ransomware. You're looking at cyber reputation risk management, tracking money through laundering of Bitcoin. There's a whole range of things that you're doing in just about every facet of business and social life. There is these elements that are causing great concern for people.
Yeah, and we're also opening up a free center. So it's Western Case. So it's a cybersecurity center for cybersecurity engagement, community engagement. And we'll be offering free cyber incident response services for small and medium-sized business in New South Wales, specifically for data breach, ransomware, and payment diversion fraud. Because at the moment, even the banks, they can't keep up with the amount of small businesses. It's not just large businesses being hit on a daily basis. And so we're training up 100 students per year who will man the center and man the call lines and go live dealing, helping with small business.
And where will that be, Professor?
That's going to be located physically at the Western Sydney University building, right across from Parramatta Railway Station.
Yes.
We will open our doors February 28th. The website, My Case, goes live on the 28th. The call lines go live, and we'll be rolling. And so there's two or three universities across Australia that have all been received funding from the federal government to really get in there and train not only the next generation of digital defenders, but to step in and relieve the burden from the companies trying to provide the services at the moment, because they're just inundated, and small and medium-sized business are at ground zero. In fact, I would say they're at negative two.
That's an amazing undertaking, and it's good that the federal government has supported this to allow you to be able to train those students and actually have a good training ground for students in understanding cybersecurity and how to manage it. Now, you talk about the small business, medium and small business, and the issue it is. In what monetary terms, on average, does a small business suffer from, say, hacking or a hacking event or malware?
Well, hacking's a terrible term because it doesn't really discuss anything. So the two things we see, I would say three things we see companies being hit by at the moment are payment diversion fraud, and sometimes it's also just called business email compromise.
So, sorry, Professor, what do you mean by that when you say payment diversion fraud?
So typically, what ends up happening is someone will receive a text or an email within a company, and there'll be nothing in that email or text to indicate that you're not dealing with the right person. So it tends to be look like it's coming from an email, either from a supplier that you've dealt with in the past or from someone internal to your organization. All of it fraudulent account. Phishing is no longer detectable through human eyes, and it hasn't been for some time. So it comes in, right? So
Sorry to interrupt, but I think our listeners need to understand the enormity of those comments that you've just made. Listeners, phishing is not being picked up by your naked eye. It's so sophisticated and spot on. That's really what you're saying.
Yeah, so I'll get almost everybody has a phone right now, and everybody's being inundated with texts that say, hey, your parcel's ready to be picked up, or notice you haven't checked on your parcel with a link. Now, there's a lot of people, unfortunately, that do get scammed by that. And at the moment, you know, predominantly that's happening because everybody's expecting a parcel because of COVID, because everybody's shopping online, right? Mm-hmm. That's actually detectable, right? Because most people know, oh, well, wait, you know, FedEx doesn't contact me that way. It actually says FedEx when it comes up, and it has a really specific protocol, right? So that's actually detectable. But what's coming through with the texts and the emails for businesses isn't like that. It's not detectable. You wouldn't be tipped off in most instances. And so, and I'll explain this in a few more steps, which is why accounting controls are extremely important not to be defrauded. So you will, it'll come in your email or your text looking like it's from someone either internal to your corporation, your organization, or from a trusted supplier that you've dealt with. But you may have dealt with that person or that organization for 20 years. And so they've hacked and got in a way into that system in order to take over, whether it's the email account or a mobile phone or a separate device, and they can come in through a number of different ways and mechanisms. So once you receive that email, you just think you're dealing with someone in your company or you think you're dealing with a supplier. And what ends up happening is that you will receive a request to make a payment that you normally would have made at the exact same time around the exact same amount of money, only the account will have changed. So they'll say, we're moving our banking and our transactions, and the new account to put this payment into is the following. So you just think you've made your $12,500 payment, right, to your legitimate supplier, but it turns out that's been fraudulently redirected to a criminal's account. Now, is that criminal going to be located across the street? Well, maybe, but not likely. They're likely to be located somewhere else on the planet. And that money will be laundered at the speed of light. Bam, boom, bam. It's in three countries in 2 days.
So what's a simple way of preventing that sort of fraud?
Accounting controls.
So what do you mean by accounting controls? Is it
so
that,
what some organizations have implemented, and certainly, probably the ones we see with the greatest controls are the ones that have like really insane amount of suppliers. So they would be dealing with so many people that they have to have all sorts of controls and mechanisms. And so they would have what's known as a whitelist. Like, here are the companies we work with. Here are the people at those companies that we work with. And they only ever allowed two people at the other company you could ever deal with, 2 to 3 people. And you have to either physically get up from your desk and walk to talk to the person within your company before you make the transaction, or you have to pick up the phone to call them on the whitelisted number. They can't deviate and give you a new telephone number, only at that telephone. And you can only get authorization of that payment from the two people on your whitelist. Anybody else is no dice. And if you have that rapport and you get used to calling them every time, it's a pain in the butt. And if you're accounted, right, like it takes extra time, but it has to be done. Because you'll know the familiarity of the voice, you'll et cetera, and then you'll be able to pick it up, right? If the person at the other end suddenly, you know, is a male and the other person you've been dealing with is a female or has a different accent, you'll be able to pick it up.
We got to go to a break. We could talk to you all day. It's just amazing. We haven't even got to what we really want to talk about. It's just been great conversation. And we're going to look at some more practical and more specific things that all of us could potentially fall victim to. It's absolutely delightful to have Professor Alana Marichet, Professor of Cybersecurity and Behaviour at School of Social Sciences from the University of Western Sydney, talking to us about some really cool and really interesting things. We'll have a little break and come back to you very shortly.
Alive 90.5.
It's 19 minutes past 11. Alive 90.5 Spotlight with Jim Darren.
It's really delightful to have in our studio Professor Alana Marichet, who is the head, the Professor of Cybersecurity and Behaviour School of Social Sciences at Western Sydney University. Just incredible knowledge and experience in a whole range of different areas. I want to ask this question. Let's say and I hope this is not a question without notice, Professor, but, you know, credit cards is a really big issue for people. Tell us what your experience is around credit cards and payments and, you know, you lose your wallet, what happens, all of those
credit
things.
Cards aren't a big deal. It's like a joke. So we'll move on. I'll tell you in 30 seconds why the bank reimburses you every time unless you've been hyper-negligent. Done. Insurance is in place. Risk policies are in place. You're not vulnerable on your credit card. So move to the next question, because that's actually where you're not vulnerable. Yep. You're always going to be recompensed.
Okay, good. Okay. Thank you for that succinctness, and I understand what you're talking about. A lot of people have been buying Bitcoin, and you are looking at the whole area of how that is being used as a vehicle.
Yes. So, well, as a vehicle, but also people don't realize the most amount of hacking and attacks that are occurring at the moment are actually in crypto. And so holding wallets, they're not very secure. And so we would get about 10 calls a day on, and it tends to be from anyone from a kid from 14. You'd be surprised how many 14-year-olds have crypto, all the way up to people in their 80s who thought crypto was a great idea. So they buy the cryptocurrency no matter what it is, and then their wallets get hit and then they lose the funds. And that's honestly, it's the number one thing hacked at the moment. So that's the first instance, right? So that's a huge source.
Can I just ask you, Professor, when you talk about a wallet, what do you mean? Because that's an interesting concept, the wallet.
Yeah, so it's a digital wallet. And this is the crazy thing about a lot of cryptocurrencies. When you hold a cryptocurrency, it's linked back to a wallet and it's a digital wallet. And most people keep their digital wallets, for example, like on a USB or a key tag of some sort. But if you lose that and you lose your wallet, you lose your money for life. There's no bank you can go to and ask, you know, I forgot this or that. Like if you lose your wallet. So I've got a colleague and he bought Bitcoin when it first came out, a whole bunch of it. And he could probably retire, but he lost his wallet and he can never access his funds again. So that's a separate issue. But your wallet is actually just a piece of software code at the end of the day. So it sits on a system, and it's meant to be quite secure, but it's not. I don't care what anyone says. The number one hack thing at the moment are actually crypto accounts.
So just unpacking that, Professor. So you're saying that you have a key, and you have that USB key, and you lose it, you lose your wallet, but at the same time, whatever is on that key seems to be hackable in a way such that someone else can get the server wallet and take away your Bitcoin.
Yeah, it's actually high risk buying crypto at the moment. So you'd want to do your homework. So some platforms are now reimbursing for hacking, but that's brand new in the last 6 months.
So
they're starting to do that.
Just pulling your through threads together, and on the credit card, you expertly said that the banks manage that. They manage the risks. They do everything. Will we get to a point with Bitcoin where we'll have reputable banks manage the risk of Bitcoin, or is that not going to happen? What's your thought?
Oh, that has to happen. It's only a matter of time before the governments step in and they're just like, no dice. You either play by the game and, you know, these are at some point the banks may step in, but it might just be there's a whole series of new regulations where crypto exchanges and whatnot are regulated similar to banks. That's coming. It's only a matter of time for
that. So in the meantime, how do we protect ourselves if we do have Bitcoin? I don't. I haven't gone in that area. So
no, I haven't either.
I'm not conversant with it. But those who might be listening and just take it up.
Sorry, Bitcoin, but I actually wouldn't buy Bitcoin. I don't think Bitcoin's a good investment.
Well,
but
crypto
that's a
in general.
Crypto
yeah,
in
yeah.
general. So do your homework on the exchange and the wallets. So make sure that, you know, you haven't just gone to the first hit on Google. You've gone four pages deep with all the search results and really have a look to see what some of the different platforms offer in terms of reimbursement if you're hit. Have a look to see if it's all hype as opposed to, but you know, it's not easy to know when something's hype and when it isn't. So stable coins are likely going to be gaining far more value, in my opinion, going forward. So any kind of crypto that utilizes a stable coin, and it's called stable coin for a reason. It's more stable and less volatile for hacking, for a range of things. And it's only a matter of time before a lot of new functionality will be built into crypto so that you can't do half the nonsense you're doing now, but it's an evolution.
So in a way, it comes down to a risk.
It's a risk.
Basis.
You have to have a high risk intake if you're going to be. Yeah. I mean, crypto is the future, but at the moment, you need to have a high risk intake. Like you're far better off having your money in the bank if you're not a risk taker, because banks have to compensate you for any of you know, things that happen on their side that are negligent.
Professor, I just want to step to the side. We talk about ransomware. That's a growing issue, and I applaud you and the university and the government with regards to taking on, particularly for small business. We don't have a lot of money, small businesses, you know, to do that, and yet it's vital for the efficiency of running all businesses, particularly small businesses. Tell our listeners what you think, what ransomware is, how does it come about, what do we do, can you help us, and so on.
So ransomware is basically when you arrive, whether it's your personal computer or a work device, and you go to turn it on, and then you can't access something that you've always been able to access before. And then usually you get a message saying that you need to pay a ransom in order to recover the data and the systems and everything else. And that ransom is always paid in cryptocurrency because it's far more challenging to trace cryptocurrency. So it's the criminal's choice and the money launderer's choice method at the moment. It's just easier to do it, and there's far less likelihood of it being traceable back the other end. For now, it'll be different in a year's time, because the amount of money that's being spent on crypto tracing is astronomical at the moment to develop those technologies.
It's quite mind-boggling, all those things putting together. So the idea that crypto is the coin that the hackers, or sorry, I'll use that word, I know it's not quite a right word, but those who are nefarious would want to be paid with because of the lack of traceability. But at the same time, there's a lot of work to improve that as well. So it's going to be quite a changing a landscape. Back to some simple things that people can do. So the idea of the message on your phone, and you think it's too good to be true. What's your recommendation for some simple steps for people to do?
It's called the ASD Essential 8. There's actually a whole slew of other things businesses need to do, but you'd be shocked, even government agencies who haven't implemented the Essential 8. And so for ransomware, we're finding there's a couple of things that are really important, but multi-factor authentication is everything. And how many of us use it? So I'll give you an example. I don't understand why any system should come at the moment without everything being multi-factor enabled. And what multi-factor means is that there's two methods of verification of your account, right? So even for a simple email, right? So you'll put in your password, but then it'll send you a unique identifier to your phone, and then you have to put that unique identifier in. You know, criminals are there for the money, and if they have to do three extra steps to make their money, they're not going to do it because they'd rather hit the easy or the low-hanging fruit. For now, once the entire world's using multi-factor authentication, they'll have moved on with their techniques. But for now, that's a really easy way of taking basic steps to better secure yourself from ransomware. So I'll give you an example. A lot of companies at the moment run off social media platforms, right? So loads of people are running companies.
For example?
Well, just anyone who's running an online business will have a social media webpage, whether it's Twitter, LinkedIn, Facebook, on Instagram, whatever you're posting things, you have to have MFA turned on to there. How many of us even know that you can do that? And it takes about 10 minutes to do. But you need to have it turned on for all of your accounts.
So a small business with multi-factor authentication, I agree, it's paramount and everyone should be doing it. If someone needs help with that, like they don't have in-house IT and they think it's going to be real difficult, is the government providing some help with that?
There's actually loads of great websites that have all sorts of instructions around that, but we're going to take it one step further. So we're going to be using a branch of research that really is only just starting, and that's in behavioral economics and cybersecurity. So what are those points that, right? Because awareness actually doesn't work. So, right? Because we're all aware that, you know, like smokers, they're aware they shouldn't smoke, but it's not going to stop them from smoking. People are aware they shouldn't steal, doesn't stop them from stealing, right? And there's all sorts of
drink driving.
Yeah, exactly. There's like a million different factors that go into, you know, any decision, any day as a human. So what are the things that can actually make a human go from mere awareness to empowerment and having the confidence to make that first step in better securing their systems, to having factors in place that will drive them to actually do it? And so we're hoping to start a new line of research called security activation, and then we'll be using behavioral economic principles to measure it. And we'll be doing that in a way that helps people. So we're going to start a roadshow, basically, a security activation roadshow with the students and a number of key companies helping us with this. And so we'll be going to all different points of New South Wales between now and June, COVID permitting, actively working with business councils and regional councils to bring businesses in. And they bring devices in and we show them how to do things. It's literally that simple. So we'll give an overview on what to do and what not to do, take a little pamphlet with a QR code home, a magnet. And it's like, here's how you turn multi-factor authentication on for Instagram. Now, see, that wasn't that hard. Now, you can probably do that with your email now.
Wonderful tips. Any parting thoughts, because we're just out of time, what would be, apart from multi-factor, or you might just say multi-factor, what's your number one tip for those listeners this morning?
Well, if it's too good to be true, it is, always. Like, you're not the lucky one who got the tip. You're never the lucky one who got the tip. Never once ever are you the lucky one who got the tip. You're a victim of cybercrime. And quit answering those bloody quizzes on Facebook. What do you think they're doing?
Yes.
Do you really think they care about your answer?
Oh, wow. We could talk about that for another day as well. Facebook quizzes, yes.
Well, Professor, it's been absolutely a delight to have you in the studio. Both Darren and I would love to invite you to come back and continue to tell the story, and particularly what you're doing for small business. It would be we would be absolutely delighted if you accept our invitation.
Sure. Sounds lovely.
Fantastic.
Have a great morning.
Alive 90.5.